Real Estate Money and More, Episode 3.
You finally found it. Welcome to the show that helps thousands with real estate, money, and a whole lot more. Now here is our host, Shane Willis.
Well, hello, and welcome to Real Estate Money and a Whole Lot More. My name's Shane Willis, and this is the podcast for investors and entrepreneurs to get ideas and tips that can help them succeed financially and in life. It is my sincere hope that we can be a small part in helping you get to the next level. And part of this week's hopeful journey to help you succeed is how not to pay taxes here in the U.S. Well, wait a minute. Let me clarify for just a second. I'm not going to talk about avoiding taxes altogether. We are going to talk about part of the U.S. Internal Revenue Service Code 1031, or as we all call it, 1031, as far as exchanges are concerned, and how you can kick the can down the road a little ways when it comes to paying taxes on gains and properties. We haven't seen a lot of 1031 exchanges happen over the last couple of years just because there hasn't been a whole lot of equity over the last couple of years. Ever since the economic meltdown started in 07, 08, till now it's, 14. But in 14, we're starting to see some of those property values go back up. So we're going to talk about how a 1031 can help you reach your investment goals with real estate a little quicker. I do have a few personal things I wanted to talk about first, just as the opening of the show. One, it's now July 2014. We're recording this show. And we were honored to be presented this month in Top Agent Magazine as one of the top agents in the Eastern Seaboard. So that was kind of a call out of the dark that came to me earlier this year. Guy called me, interviewing me, asked a bunch of questions about my military service and stuff of that nature, and then wanted to talk about our volume here in real estate. And then I got an email saying, hey, we want to put you in as one of our featured agents in the July issue of Top Agent Magazine. So they did. I was honored for that. If you want to see the article they wrote about me, I'll put it in the show notes. So visit realestatemoneyandmore.com/episode3. Another big thing that I've been getting a few emails about from not just the podcast, but also from other speaking engagements, is people wanting to know updates on the book that I have coming out with Brian Tracy and the Emmy Award-winning director, Nick Nanton, Transform. That book is scheduled right now. We've put a tentative schedule date of September. I want to say it's either 15th or 16th as a release date. But as it gets closer, I'll be letting you know. Just pay attention to the podcast here, and I'll be letting you know how things are going on that. But we have got the rough draft completed for the book, and we're doing, I think this is the third round of editing this week, with two or three more, and then book cover designs are supposed to happen later this month, and then we should be getting really, really close to being done. So we are scheduled tentatively for early September, 15th or 16th this year for that release of that book. But enough about me. Let's talk about 1031 exchanges, what they are, and how they can benefit you as a real estate investor. Now, in order to start the whole process, I want to go over kind of why we do a 1031 exchange. What is it? What are the benefits there? One of the reasons that we do a 1031 exchange is to defer taxes. Let me just kind of back up all the way. When you buy a property and it appreciates in value, let's say you paid $50,000 for a foreclosure in 2010 because it was really, really low at that time. In 2010, 2011, here in my area, we actually had an oil spill. So we were in the middle of the economic meltdown and we had an oil spill. So there was quite a few properties that got sold at what we call a fire sale. They sold very, very, very cheaply. Because people thought our beaches were going to be ruined and stuff of that nature. So they got sold really, really cheap. But if you bought that property at, say, $50,000, and today it's worth $100,000. And I don't know that to be. I mean, I'm sure there are some properties that way. But we're just trying to say easy money. Today it's worth $100,000. Well, you have a capital gains of $50,000 if you sold that property. And if you sold it today, just a straight sale, the IRS is going to come knocking on the door saying, where's our tax on the $50,000 gain? Because you have to pay that. What the exchange loophole or what a 1031 will allow you to do is to sell that property and keep the gain. You won't have to pay taxes on that $50,000 because you can exchange it into a like-kind property. Now, let's stop there because there's where a lot of people get confused. What is a like-kind? Define like-kind. Well, in real estate, it's fairly simple. And I want to make sure that I do the caveat. I think I forgot to do this at the beginning of the show, and the lawyers and the accountants would all shoot me for it. I'm not an accountant. I'm not an attorney. Please get advice from your certified accountant, and please obtain legal advice from your attorney. There, I'm covered now. So I'm not giving legal advice. I'm not giving accounting advice. Go talk to them. But the way it works is the 1031, you exchange to a like-kind property. In real estate, it just means to real estate, which means if I own a single-family residence and I exchange it to another single-family residence, that's fine. If I exchange it to a duplex, that's okay. If I exchange it to a fourplex, that's okay. If I exchange it to a strip mall, that's okay. If I explain it to a warehouse, that's okay. If I exchange it to a farm, probably okay. If I exchange it to a car, not so much. Wait, that's not a like kind. So it's really not, I mean, I hate to dumb it down so much, but it's really not difficult to understand. Like kind. Now they say that you want to go like kind, because that tax code of 1031 exchange is not exclusive to real estate. You can have businesses that have a corporation has a jet that they've had and depreciated the value of the jet over the last 10 years, 15 years, want to buy another one. They can exchange the value that they sold the other one on, which probably was more than they owe or more than they paid for it, especially after depreciation. They can exchange it to a new jet. And it defers. Now, I wanted to make sure I clarified that too. We're not telling that you're not going to pay taxes on this stuff. You are eventually. But this is deferred the taxes down the road. So I don't have to pay taxes right now. That $50,000 gain that I made on that house, I don't have to pay the taxes on right at this moment. So what does that mean for us as an investor? How is that helping us get further? Well, if we're not having to pay taxes on that money, that means that we have more money in hand to purchase like-kind property. So after that $50,000, if I had to pay 30% or 35% or whatever the percentage is for your tax record, again, consult the CPA. If I had to pay 30%, that's $15,000. I've only got $35,000 that I can put extra towards an additional piece of real estate or a like-kind property. Whereas if I don't have to pay taxes, then I've got the entire 50. And those numbers obviously can range and go up and go way down and way up. You know, I see commercial real estate where a $40 million multi-unit apartment complex gets transferred to a $60 million shopping mall. So it doesn't matter, like kind there, but your dollars can go up and down. But for us individual investors, it really is just a way to kind of supercharge our investment by avoiding paying taxes now while we continue to build the real estate portfolio up. So that's the purpose behind the 1031 exchange. Now let's get into some details on how it works and what the process is for a 1031 exchange. First of all, I wanted to make sure that everyone knew this is different from Section 121 of the tax code, which talks about principal residences. There is a non-taxable amount when you sell a principal residence you've lived in for more than 2 years. That's a different part of the code. So typically, 1031 exchanges are not used for primary residence. This is an investment property only tax code that you'd want to use, because most of the time your primary residence will not qualify. There may be some stuff I'm not aware of, but I know that even with, if someone exchanged a investment property to a fourplex and used one of the units as their primary residence, that actually causes what's called a boot, and we're going to discuss that in a little bit, which triggers a taxable value because it's, the primary residence is outside of the scope. So this is not used for primary residence. It's only used for investment property. So what do we have to do in order to do a 1031 exchange? Well, it's a little different, and there are some pretty strict guidelines that we have to follow. One, you got to get a qualified intermediary. This is, you've got to find someone, a title company, a lawyer's office that handles these as a qualified intermediary, because you can't touch the funds. That's one thing that you're going to have to be real clear of. If you've got that $50,000 house that we talked about and you're now selling it for $100,000, when you sell that property, you can't touch the funds. The funds are not yours. Any cash you touch is going to trigger a taxable event. So that's something you can't do. You got to have a qualified intermediary, and you want to set that up prior to closing on the property you're selling. Now, we're talking about a straight 1031 exchange right now. We're going to get into a few minutes a reverse 1031 exchange. It works basically in reverse, but I want to set the stage for the 1031, just the straight, the more common exchange happens. So we got to get a qualified intermediary. This is the person who's going to handle the transaction. Yes, they are going to charge more money than a typical title company, but that's because they're doing triple the work as well. So $600, $700, $800, $900, $1,000, whatever it is, to facilitate this transaction, if I can pay this title company, instead of paying another title company $300 or $400 to do a regular sale, if I can pay this other one $1,000, I pay them $600 more, but I can avoid paying capital gains tax on $50,000. My answer is very simple. Thank you. May we have another? So we get the qualified intermediary, and I'll put up on the show notes a couple of good intermediaries that I have found and a couple that I've used over the years. And like I said, they're starting to come back. I haven't seen a whole lot of 1031 exchanges, but in the past month or so, I've been getting asked that question a lot, and so I've asked around some more, too, to see if other agents and brokers in the area are starting to see some more, and we are. We're starting to pick up an activity of that. So I'm sure that as real estate's starting to rise again, as you're seeing some of these foreclosures that were bought at deep, deep discounts, people are going to start wanting to exchange into better properties or different strategies of, you know, I always tell people that a good strategy is like playing Monopoly. You buy four little houses and you trade it in for one big red hotel. In our case, you buy four little single-family residences. You trade it in for either a quad or a sixplex or an eightplex or an apartment complex or a strip mall or something like that. So it's all about cash flow. That's a different episode, and we'll talk about that down the road. So, okay, rabbit trail over. We got past the qualified intermediary. We know we have to have a qualified intermediary, and we have to have it prior to closing of the relinquished property. So now we have some timelines that we have to meet. This is not a can we meet. This is have to meet. If we do not meet them, we are disqualified from 1031 exchange, and the sale is now a taxable event. So, and when I talk about these days, guys, I want you to remember this is calendar days, not business days. The first date is you have, once you sold the property that you're selling to do the exchange, once you've sold that, you have 45 days, calendar days, to identify the new property that you want to exchange into. 45 days, and that's to identify the list. Then you have 180 days to close. Okay, let me hit time out again. So qualified list, you got 45 days to do a list. First of all, remember, and I've seen this happen plenty of times, it's calendar. If that 45th day from the day you sell your first property, if that 45th day falls on a Sunday, you got 43 days. Because if it falls on a Sunday, it doesn't matter. The 46th day is Monday. If you do not have the list identified by the 45th calendar day, you're done. This is over. It's a taxable event now. you're not able to take advantage of the 1031 exchange code. But let's talk about that. So what are the rules on finding the replacement properties? Well, I said that you have 45 days to identify the list. Well, you know, we can't make it that easy. What's the list consist of? Well, there's a couple of different options for identifying the replacement property. Probably the most common type of identification is you have to identify three possible properties. Usually we don't get to the 45-day rule. When I help my clients out working on these, we're not there at the 45-day mark or not. We're done well before that. We've already done our due diligence before the 45-day mark. But the three-property rule, you have three possible replacement properties. Now, on day 46, a new property comes on the market and you want to throw in the list? Sorry. It doesn't work that way. You have 45 days to identify three properties that you can transfer into, and you must purchase one of those three. Now we have 180 days to close. But that 180 days is not from the end of the 45th day. The 180 days goes back to the day that we sold our relinquished property. So the day that you sell that relinquished property, the clock starts ticking. You got 45 days to identify up to three properties and 180 days from that day to close on one of those three properties. Now, that's one way of identifying replacement properties. There's a couple of others. One is called the 200% rule. This allows you to identify more than three properties. You're not limited to three properties. This is less common. But the total value of all the properties that you identify cannot be more than 200% of the sale of the relinquished property. So, for instance, let's say you sold a single-family residence for $200,000. Well, then all the properties you identify can't be worth more than $400,000. All of them. So it doesn't really work all that well, especially with single-family residential or even residential condo properties, because it just doesn't work as well. You don't get to, I mean, at the $400,000 we're talking about there, it's probably only going to be three properties. It's if that, it's probably going to be less. So that's why the three-property rule usually comes into effect. There is one other one that is really less used, but I wanted to make sure that I put it out there so you guys understand it. It's called the 95% rule. Under the 95% rule, you can identify as many properties as you want to. You can identify 100. We don't care if you're following up under that 95% rule. Here's the catch. Close on 95% of them. You must close on 95% of them. That sounded like Yoda there. Close on 95% of them, you must. You have to close on 95% of the properties that you have identified under this rule. That makes it real tricky when you're trying to negotiate certain things and you have to close on 95% of them. That rule is very seldom used. I have never seen it used in any of my clients. And I've actually only seen the 200% rule used once. It was a commercial client. And he was looking to buy a couple of apartment complexes. And the relinquished property was a very large apartment complex that I want to say he had sold for $42 million or something like that. Anyways, so the 200% rule was not hard to fit into that, because at $42 million, as long as the other properties didn't go over $84 million, he could identify all of them that he wanted to. But the most popular one, and the one that you'll probably use, is the three-property rule. You got 45 days. You have 180 days to close. So we got 45 days to get the property selected and 180 days to close. Okay, so that seems easy enough, Shane. Well, let's make sure we're following all the rules. Remember I said earlier in the show I was talking about the boot. And we're not talking about the proverbial boot out the door. We're just talking about a boot. What is a boot when it comes to 1031 exchanges? Well, there's a lot of ways that you can have what they call a boot. Now, a boot is basically what has to be taxed. this is what the IRS is going to say. This is outside of the scope of the 1031, and it's going to be taxed. Now, there's really two common types of boots that real estate investors will come across. That's the mortgage boot and the cash boot. The mortgage boot, this is one that if you're not dealing with a professional that understands these well enough, can get a lot of people in trouble. I've seen this happen time and time and time again. Remember that $200,000 property we were talking about we sold? If it had a $100,000 mortgage on it, when you buy the next property, that property better have at least a $100,000 mortgage on it. If, let's say, you sold the first property for $200,000 with a $100,000 mortgage on it, you bought the next property for $150,000, but you only put a $50,000 mortgage on it because you were able to pay it off with the extra $100,000 you made in equity. You just created a mortgage boot. The IRS said the discount in loans or debt that you're covering or carrying on your real estate properties has been paid down, and that $50,000 is forgiveness, debt reduction, debt forgiveness. I forget the terminology they use. Anyways, that's a mortgage boot. You have to pay taxes on that $50,000. So make sure when you do a property that has a loan on it, when you relinquish a property that has a loan on it, make sure that you get the same amount or bigger loan on the next one so that you can avoid the mortgage boot. Now, there's other thing called a cash boot. Cash boot is when you receive something that's not like kind, or here's it, ready? Wait for it. Cash. There's if you get a note on a property, that's not a like kind. So you can't get a promissory note on these. You're kind of limited in some of your outside-the-box financing or creative financing when it comes to 1031 exchanges. Any of that stuff would be considered a cash boot. If you're paying cash for repair charges, let's say a seller's paying cash for the repair charges and you're the buyer. Well, the amount the seller paid towards those repair charges is a cash boot. That's not a like-kind exchange. There's also something called a personal property boot. It's very easy, really, to kind of get around. Again, don't make sure you talk to the CPA, talk to the qualified intermediary, talk to the attorney. But if we start talking about refrigerators, washers, dryers, stoves, and you've depreciated them, and we try and do those in the 1031 exchange, that's considered a personal property boot, and you could be taxed. Now, the way to avoid that is make sure that when you write the contract on the property that you're purchasing or the property you're selling, that the appliances are not part of the sale. So that's really not that hard to do. Now, the other one that I talked about earlier was a personal residence boot. And this is one I mentioned earlier when I said that you sold a single family residence and bought a fourplex, but moved into one of the units. That's not a full-on like kind. So what they will do is take a fourth of the property and charge that as the boot. So if you paid $200,000 for a fourplex, then you've got a $50,000 boot because you're using it as a personal residence now. Don't do that, and you won't have any boots to worry about. So anytime this comes up in a topic that I'm discussing or on a panel that I'm on, I always get asked the question, Shane, I'm driving down the road. Spot this property that is ideal for what I'm looking for, and it meets my investment criteria as we speak right now. And I've got a couple of properties that I want to sell, but I want to get this one under contract and I get it bought. But I can't do that as a 1031 exchange because I won't have the other property sold before I need to close on this one for financing reasons or for deadline reasons, for whatever. So I guess I just can't do a 1031 exchange. Wrong. You can. There's just something called a reverse 1031 exchange. Now, it's fairly simple, and it's almost like a regular 1031 exchange, except everything works in reverse, and you're probably going to have a little capital in hand to make it happen. Plus, you are not allowed to hold both properties at the same time. So there is another aspect to this, and this is where you really want to do your homework on the intermediary, because it's a different tax structure. You're actually going to have an exchange accommodation title holder. You know, what the heck is that? That means when you buy that new property, you're not going to buy it. Although you're going to write the check for it, you're not going to buy it. Somebody else has to hold the title of that property while you complete the sale of the property you're relinquishing. Now you know why I say you better do your homework on the people that you're going to talk to. They're actually going to be holding title to this property. Now, it works just the same. You find the property. Let's say it's a $200,000 property and you've got $100,001 you're going to relinquish. This got a $50,000 mortgage on it. You want to buy this $200,000 property using the $50,000 of equity, and you just want to be able to put a $50,000 or $100,000 loan on it. That's fine, except you're going to have to come to the table with that $100,000 in cash. So you bought this $200,000 property now that you're moving into, and you got a $100,000 mortgage. You're going to have to bring the $100,000 cash. Then, when you sell your other property, you'll get the cash back. So you can't really, you kind of touch the money, but when a reverse 1031 exchange happens, you're actually having to bring to the table the money that needs to be closed. So it's not done typically, but I have seen it done to where you don't lose a deal. Now, they do still have the 180-day time frame. That has not changed. And your 45 days is still in effect. But the 45 days is not that hard to accommodate, because all you have to do is, during that 45 days, is identify the property you're going to relinquish. Well, going into this, you probably already know which one that is. And unless you have thousands of properties and you just have to kind of scroll through your Excel spreadsheet of which one you want to let go of, this shouldn't take anywhere close to 45 days. It should take, you know, an hour or two, maybe longer if you have a bigger portfolio. But you still have the 180 days. So it kind of works a little in reverse, where you're going to have to ensure the property you're relinquishing does close in that 180 day period, so that you can then go to the person that is holding the title, finalize the transaction, get the title put in your name under the 1031 tax code. So it works somewhat similar, but there are still some little nuances when it comes to reverse 1031 exchanges. Now, again, why would we do something like this? It's the benefit strictly is to avoid paying taxes now. We are not avoiding them altogether. We are postponing them. I want to make sure we make that clear, because anytime I give a talk like this, I inevitably get quoted as saying that you don't have to ever pay taxes on that. And that's not really the case. You will eventually, but you can postpone it down the road a long, long ways. But you need a good accountant on it. You got to have a good team. This is a sophisticated way of buying and selling real estate. So make sure you've got a good team behind you. You've got a good broker. You've got a good qualified intermediary. You've got someone that can hold the title if you're doing a reverse. You've got a good CPA. You've got a good attorney. Real estate is a team sport. Make sure you get these people surrounding you. Now, again, you can't use 1031 exchange for other asset classes. You can use it. I think we use the example of planes. You can use it for metals. You can use it for a lot of different things, but like kind is like kind. Make sure, This show has been really kind of dedicated to the real estate side of it because I think that's the more popular side of it. But make sure when you talk with an intermediary, you understand and you get with your CPA before you pull the trigger on relinquishing whatever you're relinquishing. In real estate, it's that house that you're relinquishing to buy that next one and to move up quicker and not have to pay the taxes on it. Make sure that you qualified under the like-kind rules. I also wanted to kind of give you a little tidbit here as I've been doing some research on the show. Before we even started, I actually got an email, and I have not checked into this, but let me go real quick and check this. I got an email because I'm on a bunch of email lists. This email came out a couple of weeks ago, and it is saying that the tax code, the 1031 tax reform update. So, according to this quick bill that's floating around the House, is that they're talking about removing this code or severely crippling this code or part of the tax code. I think the IRS is not liking the fact that we don't have to pay taxes on that stuff right now. Now, this rule's been in effect since the 20s, but there's a new law that's floating around right now that says they may try and severely hurt it. And what I will do is, from this email, there's a couple of links. I'll make sure I put those in the show notes as well, so you can see what I'm talking about. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 3. I hope you see the benefits of using a 1031 exchange and how it can help you rapidly increase your portfolio, whether that be real estate or any other asset class. I hope you picked up something out of it. Make sure you check out the show notes. And if you're listening to this and want to check out the website, it's realestatemoneyandmore.com/episode3. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.